Please give a warm welcome to Mr. Ted Harrington. How you doing?
All right. Thank you, Guy. Nice. All right, thanks. Thanks, everybody. Let's start with a provocative idea. We are all attackers. Now, your first reaction to that might be, no, Ted. I work in content security for a content owner. I am absolutely not an attacker. Or you might say, no, Ted, I'm an advisor, I'm a consultant, I'm a vendor, I'm a supplier to the content owners. I'm literally at a content security conference. I am not an attacker. But I posit, we all are attackers. We all are potentially the accidental insider. The accidental insider is a member of the group known as the insider threat who harms an organization not because he or she wants to, but because he or she does something stupid. Now, we're all humans. None of us ever make mistakes, right? No one in here has made a mistake? This happens all the time. One of the things I want to help separate for you is the distinction between the idea of the insider threat and how it's actually a collection of ideas, not a single attacker type. I'm in the fortunate position that I am going to Amsterdam in a few weeks to give a presentation to at IBC, which I assume many of you might also be going to. And in preparation for that, there's been a lot of collaboration back and forth with people at IBC. And I just received this email the other day. Now, what's interesting about this email is that this is from an actual person. I changed the name so as not to put anybody on blast here. But this is an actual email from a person with whom I'd been actively coordinating, who works for an organization that I trust, about something that I am expecting to go do. And the subject of this email is something that we all would be excited about, a purchase order. Now, I wasn't necessarily expecting a purchase order, but I figured maybe they were sending me compensation for travel expenses or something like that. So I was pretty excited about this, but I run a security consulting company. So I pretty much live every day in paranoia, and so before I went and clicked that view completed document button, I passed it on to some of our internal team to check it out and see what they thought. And lo and behold, this email was an incredibly well-designed spear phishing campaign, and there was nothing but malware on the other side of that click. Well, fortunately, I listened to the sticker that my admin places prominently on her laptop, and I did not click anything. It's like, you walk into our office, there's a sign for our business, and then there's this sticker, so you kind of get the idea right away. But I was that close. I was one click away from being the accidental insider. So what is the insider threat? Well, leaders today are concerned about this type of attacker. It's a very potent adversary. It's very difficult to defend against. But there's a misunderstanding about exactly what it is. So first, we have to understand the conditions that make an attacker an insider threat. And there's essentially two. One is elevated levels of trust, and the other is elevated access. Now, why are these important? These are important because when you're considering a vulnerability, you have to consider the conditions around the vulnerability to ascertain its severity. So, for example, when we're performing an application security assessment and we find a vulnerability and we find out that it's exploitable, the level of trust and the level of access required to exploit that vulnerability directly influences how severe we might rate that particular vulnerability. In the case of the insider threat, they have elevated both of these characteristics. Now, I mentioned before the idea that the insider threat is not one idea, it's a collection of ideas. So, what are those ideas? Well, first and foremost, there's the accidental insider, which is what we're here to talk about briefly today. The accidental insider is not motivated to harm the organization. They harm the organization by doing something stupid. Fundamentally, people are stupid. I think we can all agree that stupid things happen, but that's okay. The second type would be the opportunist. Now, the opportunistic insider isn't necessarily maliciously motivated, but this particular type of attacker, when they find themselves in a situation where they could personally benefit in some way. That could literally be they could profit, or they could get some sort of ego boost, like they look cool because they got to be the one to release the next blockbuster film online. And the likelihood of getting caught is low. They're likely to proceed. Just yesterday, I was talking to a content owner who, after they had gone through the entire investigation, after a very valuable piece of their content had been leaked, they found that this is exactly what happened. There was someone working on this particular asset in post-production, sent it to a blogger purely because this individual thought he would be cool. Then there is the determined insider, and there's actually two types of determined insiders. The first is the disgruntled insider. So this is the person who once was a trusted, valued member of the organization, had no problem with the organization, and then something changed. Maybe they were passed over for a promotion, or their boss or the CEO made some political statement with which they disagree, and now they're frustrated, they're angry, and they set out to harm the organization. And then finally, there is the determined malicious insider. So what this particular entity is essentially an agent of any of those attacker groups that you might already be familiar with. So someone who is a member of organized crime, nation states, hacktivists, so on and so forth. And what this particular attacker does is they join the organization with the express intent to harm it. There was a really interesting example a few years ago where a Chinese national got a job working for a government contractor to serve NASA. And for over 20 years, this individual was siphoning top secret and sensitive information back to the Chinese government about everything from our space shuttle program to the B-2 bomber. And they did so. They joined this organization specifically to do that. So how do we defend? How do we deal with this particular type of attacker? Essentially, it boils down to two different defense paradigms. The first is technical solutions, and the second are psychological solutions. All of these different methods essentially break into three types. There's preventative methods, there's deterrence, and there's mitigating factors. Now, we're talking about the accidental insider today. Preventative methods are the most effective against the accidental insider, because as we've talked about already, they're not motivated to harm the organization, they just do the wrong thing. And so these are the types of techniques that prevent bad things from happening when the dumb thing happens. Deterrence are the kinds of things that work well against opportunists, because what deterrents do is they increase the likelihood of that individual getting caught. Everyone's familiar with watermarking, right? The idea that, fingerprinting, what these deterrents essentially do is make it so that if you're the source of the leak, it could be brought back to you. And then finally, mitigating factors are essentially how you have to think about the determined insider, which is to say, they're probably going to win. How do we make sure that the damage is minimized? So how do we do this against the accidental insider? Well, some of the common technical solutions are things like encryption and multi-factor authentication. Encryption is an example of something that would work because, let's say, the accidental insider has their iPad with some pre-theatrical content on it, they're reviewing it on a plane, and they leave the iPad in the seat back pocket by accident. It's a real thing. It happens, right? Well, what happens when the next person pulls out that iPad? Encryption makes sure that that asset that was unintentionally left available to someone else is now not accessible. The psychological approach to how you deal with the accidental insider is training. I know a lot of people often roll their eyes at the idea of training because most training is boring, but training is super effective because what it does is it helps teach somebody what they should and should not do. And in the case of the accidental insider, they harm the organization because they didn't know that they should or should not do that thing. Now, what's interesting to note is that not all defense paradigms work against all attackers. For example, would any amount of training work against that determined insider who joins the organization to hurt the organization? They already know what they should do and shouldn't do. It's not going to be effective. This is just a sampling of a collection of different techniques that some of you might already be familiar with. And what this graph essentially represents is the idea that I just introduced, that not all solutions are effective against all attacker types. Even encryption, this particular line item might raise some eyebrows and say, wait a minute, Ted, are you saying encryption is not effective? Well, what we're saying is that in terms of that particular attacker type, encryption alone is not a panacea. Why? Well, because that determined insider has elevated levels of trust and access, has access to that asset in a decrypted format. So it doesn't matter how good the encryption is, it's decrypted for them. So what should you do? How should you walk away from this session and think differently? First key takeaway is that understanding that the insider threat is not one thing, it's many things. Make sure that as you're thinking about your threat model, that you consider insiders, because fundamentally they change how you have to think defensively about what it is you're trying to achieve. And then finally, make sure to apply all these different methods and in combination, because essentially what they do is they build upon each other, the preventative, the deterrence, and the mitigating factors. With that, I am done with the session. What questions can I help answer for you?
Don't be shy.
Who's clicked on the link? Yeah, go ahead.
A lot of us work long hours, and that's when we're most tired, and that's when we do stupid things. So how do you mitigate just being tired?
How do you mitigate being? I would love to know the answer to that. I'm exhausted right now, so if anyone has that solution, that would be cool. There's sort of two psychological approaches that I think would work for that. One we already talked about, which is training. Understanding how our actions or inactions can lead to adverse outcomes. In so many ways, sometimes bad things happen just because we don't know better. The other is awareness. And oftentimes training and awareness become conflated to be the same thing. They're actually two different things. So the purpose of training is to help educate the things you should or shouldn't do. And awareness is about galvanizing the group to sort of keep an eye on each other. And the combination of those two things make it so that we now can all become a little bit more vigilant. Yes, the end of the day, we're getting tired, but this has become part of our culture. We have now made it a priority to think about security operationally, not just saying, oh, I have a password on my account. And that ultimately, it takes time, but that is eventually how it happens.
And take one more quick question. Oh, yeah. Here we go. Hold on, let me give you the mic.
In a lot of critical industries, you'll have red and blue team kind of, you know, approaches where you look to really create, you know, self-evaluation and auditing and then third parties. Media entertainment really hasn't done that as much because I think the history is being more Wild West. But as IP and kind of the criticalness of the portfolio starts to match, you know, risk to the organization, have you seen any kind of shift to that type of model yet, or you know, like from your experience applying that in the M&E space?
Sure. Well, I would even contend that the risk context is already at a point where the compromise of pre-theatrical content, which is more or less what we're talking about here, is of significant relevance to the viability of the business. So you asked a question specifically about red teaming and blue teaming, and it's worth noting that there's a lot of term confusion. People sometimes use red teaming, penetration testing, security assessments, vulnerability testing, all to mean the same thing. So given that I only have 1 minute left, and that's like a 25-minute talk to try to differentiate the two, I will try to answer your question as simply as possible, which is that the most progressive organizations that we see in this industry and in other industries as well, they're coming at security from the viewpoint of actually finding issues and fixing them. And that dovetails really well with what we're seeing from the content owners, which content owners are not saying, you must have a complete clean bill of health, and all I wanna see is no vulnerabilities. Yeah, they wanna see that, but what they wanna see is that you're constantly driving to better. You are SRE. Yeah. So I guess you could say it like that. I guess what we're getting at is, if you looked like 10 years ago, the attitude would have been, you better not have any problems. Well, the attitude today is, we understand everyone's gonna have problems. It's human nature, it's how we build things. But are you investing appropriately to actually fix them? And that's a combination of all these different techniques that I completely glossed over and did not describe. So. Thank you, everybody.
Nonetheless, excellent presentation. Thank you, Ted.